Well, the questions, you can either approach the microphone and if you have a question, or raise your hand and someone will come around and give you the microphone. So you can be seated. Be seated. So for up to 20 minutes, if we want that long, let's have a chat about this. Any questions or concerns? Anything not clear?
Good evening. I read the article, the interview that was published in the St. Paul's newsletter, and it says, "The grace of God utterly and wholly permeates our lives just as they are in the present moment. All of our failures and weaknesses are absolutely irrelevant in the face of such all-pervading grace." Now here's my question. What is grace?
Well, I can say it's amazing. We had a bagpipe in here, we could all sing it. All right, what is grace? That's a good question. What is grace? Maybe we could put it this way. Grace is the experience of having been intimately accessed by a loving tenderness that found us in an hour where we could no longer find ourselves. And it unexplainably took me to itself. See? This grace. See? We're going to be talking about this tomorrow with the mystic. In other words, put it this way. I go through life. We're going to talk more about this tomorrow. There are moments, I'll give some examples of grace. In the midst of nature, lying awake at night listening to the rain, giving ourselves over to smelling a blood-red rose, in the arms of the beloved, a moment between two people where neither can find the place where one stops and the other begins and they're not inclined to try. A moment of solitude where you're all alone with no addictive props or escapes. The pause between two lines of a poem, holding a newborn infant, sitting at the bedside of your dying mother or your dying father, looking out your own kitchen window and seeing a child run up the street, and it washes over you. There is a presence. That utterly, utterly transcends me in all of this, even as it utterly permeates me through and through and through and through, and has given me a taste of itself. See? It might be very intense, really, like a peak experience, but maybe it's subtle, 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 subtle. But as if out of the corner of your eye, you glimpse something for which no words can be found. I'll put it another way in terms of love. Ever noticed when you don't know someone very well, how easy it is to say a lot about them? Let me tell you about so-and-so. When you've loved someone very deeply for a long, long time, you don't know what to say, really. And your heart breaks when you try. And you know no matter what you'd say, it isn't what you know because you can't say it. That's grace. See? That is grace. That I have been visited. There's been a visitation in my heart. I'll give you another example. I once was giving a retreat, and this woman came up to me, this elderly lady. And you know, I was always taught growing up to respect little old ladies. And now that I'm turning into a little old man, my respect gets deeper. So this was around 40 years ago. She came up to me on a retreat. I first started giving retreats like this. And she said to me, she said she grew up on a farm. And when she was a young girl, she would go out into the orchard of that farm in the summer. And she said, "I would lie down on my back in the tall grass of the orchard, and I'd watch the clouds go by. And she looked at me and said, something was given to me there. And you could tell by the way she said it, it was as if it just happened. And it mattered to her that I knew what she was talking about. That's grace. I will not break faith with my awakened heart. I will not play the cynic. See? But a mystery I cannot understand visited me in a way I cannot understand. And I tasted it for myself. And I know it's true. I know it's true. See? That's grace. The mystery of the alcoholic is the grace is laid bare in your darkest hour. In the very moment you admit the very thing that's so scary to admit, what you're surprised by is the grace that shines out of that immense tenderness that comes to you. Anyone else with anything?
Thank you. In today's environment and news and all the stuff we hear about opiate addiction and pornographic addiction and that sort, are we talking similarities here between alcoholic addiction or all addictions?
Yes, you know, we need to make a distinction on how we use the word addiction. Okay. So there's an addiction to substances. And this has to do with genetic predisposition. It has to do with number of factors. But for some people, when that part of the brain gets tickled by that, they cannot not do it. Sometimes it happens little by little by little. Sometimes it just rolls right over them like that. And it seizes hold of them like that. Sometimes it arises more of addiction in a broader sense, of a way one is inordinately leaning upon mood-altering substances. That is, one is not an addict in that intense kind of, high-voltage, destructive way. But little by little by little, the emotional dependency on the alcohol or the cocaine, whatever it is slowly eroding away the quality of your own life. See? And even though you can tell it's numbing yourself to what matters most, you do it anyway. Which leads to being disheartened about yourself. See? There's also another kind of addiction, we'll use it in a broader sense, which has more to do with compulsive, obsessive tendencies. So we can speak of sexual addiction, or you can be addicted to anger, a rageaholic. You can be addicted to work, a workaholic. You can be addicted to religion. Anytime we use something not to have to feel what we're really feeling, and we're dependent on altering our consciousness as that which insulates us from what's most intimately going on, the relationship, our own children, whoever it is. And that pattern is a form of self-soothing, which numbs you from yourself. Eating addiction, eating disorders, anorexia, bulimia, variations thereof. And so, you know what I mean? There's distinctions across the spectrum of addiction. But at the essence of it is the loss of freedom. Anyone else with anything? Also, I was saying to somebody today, a lot of recovery in AA is choosing your addictions wisely. Imagine setting up an AA meeting and try getting away without having a coffee pot in the back of the room. Ain't gonna happen. Open rebellion will not happen. Yes.
Good evening.
Good evening.
My name is Michael and I'm an alcoholic. I'm also a recovering Catholic. And amongst this crowd, it may be heretical to say something of this nature, but I'm curious, is the way you brought it up in the higher power and the God sense and all of that, and working with other fellows in the program, I often come encounter with agnostics or atheists who don't profess to want to believe in a higher power or God. And I'm wondering how you approach that from your standpoint.
I approach it this way. I approach it this way. I say, you know, let's say, first of all, the person's coming for therapy. And let's say one of the issues in the therapy is addiction. And let's say it's dual diagnosis. There's addiction with anxiety, with panic or depression or self-loathing, whatever it is. And whatever this person's working on, they say they don't believe. You know, that they just don't believe like that in a higher power or God like that. And I always say, well, I that's to be respected. See? And I would say, how about this? How about believing that it's possible that coming here might actually help you find the wholeness that you're hoping for? How about if your commitment to your own healing would be your higher power? Or I might put it this way. Who's that person in your life who's hanging in there with you and who believes in you? See? That is, what is it in relationship to which you get your bearings in the world? Let's call that the higher power. It might just be the sincerity with which you're committed to do whatever you can to be liberated from what's destroying you. Let's call that the higher power. You can call it the universe. You can call it whatever you want to call it. So you call it whatever you want. My wife told me when she was going through her meetings, where we lived through this in this area of California where there's mountains you drive through. And on this steep edge of this hill coming up where it cuts through the pass, there was a tree clinging to the side of the rocks, like growing right out of the rock. And that tree was her higher power. You know what I mean? The tenacity of life to cling. And she held to that as her higher power. I worked with people, and I worked with people in locked psych units who were working people on 72-hour hold and self-cut, you know, suicide and all this. And they never once mentioned spirituality. I don't know what they believed. But the kind of grounded compassion with which they devoted their clinical training to helping these people at the edges of society was inspiring to me. You know, that's why there are some people who are religious, meaning a belief system, but they're not necessarily as deeply spiritual as St. Augustine once said, there are some people whom the church has, whom God does not have. And there are other people that God has and the church doesn't have. You can be a church going so-and-so. We all know that. That's why some people will say they're safer at a recovery meeting than they are in church. See? And so that's how I would answer. I would say, look, I would say to the person, what is it that with sincerity you're kind of counting on gives you hope? It even makes it meaningful to come over here today. Let's call that the higher power. See? That's what I would do. Anyone else with anything?
Hi, my name is Mark. I have a friend who's in the program. I am as well, an alcoholic. And he has a problem. I'm gonna just tell you, he's a fundamentalist Christian. Not to label him, but just to give you an idea where he's coming from. He doesn't believe that he can forgive himself. He believes only God has that power. And I've turned it back on him to say that, who do you think you are that God's already forgiven you that you can't forgive yourself? Just your thoughts on that self-forgiveness, I suppose.
Yeah, that's good. I like that, that's good. I'll say what comes to my mind. The person says, I don't believe it's in my power to forgive myself. Matter of fact, I can't forgive myself. Only God has the power to forgive me. Here would be a response. A response might be, that's good. That's really good. And therefore, we're off to a good start. Not only can, but God does forgive you. Thomas Merton used to say at the monastery, is there a Christian in the house? Please stand. See? And therefore, I'm sitting with a forgiven person. See? Because God says so. Really? But you're finding it difficult to accept God's forgiveness of you. As a matter of fact, You're not forgiving yourself is your higher power. In that you're holding on to not forget, and you're not doing it because you're bad. You're holding on to it because you can't. My heart goes out to you, really. Therefore, I have a thought. Tell me what you think about this, really. What would you think of this? Why not? I'll say it as a prayer. Lord God, I know that you are hopelessly in love with me, just as I am. Loving me through and through and through and through and through and through, just like this. And I know that you understand infinitely more than I do, that I can't join you in forgiving me. I can't do it. I also trust that you forgive me for not being able to forgive myself. Otherwise, I'm in trouble here. And therefore, but what I want to do here, God, I'm going to ask for your help to help me forgive myself. And I would ask the person, what would you think of that? What would you think about asking God to help you to forgive yourself? By the way, parentheses, not forgiving himself, probably, see, we're afraid to lose the control that we think that we have over the life that we think that we're living. See, and therefore his not forgiving of himself is power. He's addicted to the power of not forgiving. And what would happen if he would forgive himself? He would start to cry. And what he's really doing is defending himself against the vulnerability of the beauty of himself and his brokenness. And he doesn't know whether he can be vulnerable or safe at the same time. And therefore, it's important to respect that. We always have to respect the person's boundaries because it's holding them together. And then gently see where they are about risking with God's grace opening their heart a little bit, you know, like that.
My name is Don Moore. I first want to say thank you because you've been a companion to me on many car drives. I worked as a hospital chaplain and got a CD a number of years ago with you and Carolyn Mize talking about trauma and meditation. I think there was some retreat you did on that and it was about 6 hours. And so I've listened to that a number of times, and I would go on these long, you know, when I'm on a long trip like I am from Virginia right now, and would listen to that. So, and your voice is very familiar to me, and it's yeah. it's accompanied me on many trips, so thank you for that. Yeah. Thank you. But what came to mind as you were just talking was, which I identify with personally, is I forget which gospel it's in, but maybe in several, is where maybe the disciples that come down the mountain with Jesus, and they come down and see this boy who the disciples down the hill weren't able to help, and I think the father of the son says, you know, and Jesus says, anything's possible if you believe, and the father says, Lord, I believe, help my unbelief. And that's often been my own prayer, because I feel like within me dwells both those things, belief and what, for whatever reason, sort of profound unbelief. So both are true. And it's been a long journey, and it feels like a long journey in healing. But anyway, I don't know if you have any comment on that. But.
Well, thank you for sharing that. Let me share this. I'll end with this, so respect the time limit. I'll end with this. You know, first of all, that series that I did on with Carolyn Mace, I got a grant to do an extended version of that. And it's on my website, contemplativeway.org. And if you click on Institute for Spiritual Healing and put in the password to get in, there's no charge for that, which is ISH Finley. There's about 12 hours of talks on the spirituality of healing trauma and all forms of suffering, which I'm now writing as a book for Sounds True. And some people are helping me to try to do more streaming, like to offer this teachings over the internet, you know, on healing and contemplative living. And if you want to stay posted on that, if you go to my website, contemplativeway.org, there's a monthly newsletter that comes out 3 times a year because I have issues. It's true. It's really true. You sign up for that newsletter, you can be kept posted on that. But people say that with those audio sets. They feel that they know me, you know, because they travel around with them and so on. But you know, that story is a case in point. See, Lord, I believe, help my unbelief. And notice that in that moment, the father said that. The person said that. See, in that moment, he was vulnerable. In a vulnerable like this. And that was his moment. That was the graced event of letting into his heart what he couldn't achieve and didn't have to achieve it. Because it achieved its... We cannot achieve it, but it achieves itself in us and our inability to achieve it. And that's what makes us so grateful, I guess. So, I'm done. And thank you for your presence here. And see you tomorrow.
Just a couple of logistical announcements for tomorrow for those of you who are going to be back with us. We have been told by the Cleveland Heights Police Department that they would be happy for us to be able to park along the street here on Coventry Road, which is right to the east of us, or on Fairmount Boulevard, which is to the south of us. And even though the signs say no parking, they will be happy for us to park there tomorrow. We also have our neighbors on the other corner, Fairmount Presbyterian Church, that has a parking lot directly across from the entrance on Fairmount. And they have graciously made that available for us tomorrow. So hopefully you won't have to walk quite as far when you park your cars. We urge you to be here promptly tomorrow. We hope to start at 9 o'clock, and there will be some coffee and such tomorrow. So please come as early as 8:30 and register, get name tags, and we'll look for a full day tomorrow.
Yes, and you know what I've decided to do, because we're going to look at Thomas Merton and Teresa of Avila. So I'm going to devote the morning to Thomas Merton as mystic teacher and guiding our own awakened hearts. And then devote the afternoon to Teresa of Avila, to the interior castle. So it'll be a day with these two mystics and together. See you tomorrow.